Over the past 100 years, the landscape in the North Bay of San Francisco has changed. What was once an intricate network of tidal marshes and other wetland habitats became an agricultural landscape, replete with levees and dikes in order to produce salt or grow oat and hay for cattle and horses. Cut off from the bay and tidal action, the land here has subsided below sea level, and in more recent years, farming has become less profitable and less sustainable. During this same period of time, the role wetlands play as habitat for waterfowl and other wildlife, as flood control for neighboring communities, and as a place where people can go to enjoy open space, has become more recognized and valued. Since 1996, a diverse group of agencies and organizations, all partners of the San Francisco Bay Joint Venture, have been protecting these lands in an effort to restore them back to wetland habitats. What does it mean to restore a wetland? Why has it become so important to do so? And where is it happening along Highway 37, the North Bay Flyway Highway? Hi, I'm Jerry Kay, and on this audio tour, you'll meet some of the project managers and biologists who can tell you what you're seeing as you drive along this stretch of highway and what's involved in protecting this landscape. People who will share their vision for the return of the wetlands in the North Bay. As you drive west on Highway 37, leaving Vallejo on the Mare Island overpass, you're crossing over the Napa River, where it joins San Pablo Bay at the end of a 50-mile journey from Mount St. Helena. To the south of the road is the San Pablo Bay National Wildlife Refuge, owned and managed by the Fish and Wildlife Service. Christy Smith, Refuge Manager, gives us a brief history about the service and its mission.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is made up of approximately 5 different branches. The National Wildlife Refuge System is one of those branches. It has over 540 national wildlife refuges in it, encompassing more than 100 million acres. These refuges are found in every state, including Alaska, Hawaii, and its territories of Puerto Rico and Guam. It was primarily established to protect breeding birds. As time went on, most of the refuges were developed for migratory waterfowl to protect ducks and to make sure that duck populations were maintained for hunters through perpetuity. Most of our earlier funding, and to this day, a lot of our land acquisition funding, most of it comes from duck hunting or from hunting licenses. The idea of preserving a bed and breakfast, if you will, for waterfowl and other migratory birds caused that most of the early refuges were established along waterways or the coasts, and that is the Pacific Flyway. We are located in the San Francisco Bay, where in historic days this bay would be filled with every type of waterfowl and water bird, and the skies would blacken with them. If you read the historical accounts, it's pretty phenomenal what used to occur here. National wildlife refuges are established with the idea that we manage for wildlife first. Over half of our refuges are closed to the public because they're located in isolated areas. You may never get to see some of those areas, but they are there to protect wildlife or habitat. They are the very core or fiber of an ecological web that covers this earth.
North of 37, just past Mare Island, are two adjacent wetland restoration projects: Cullinan Ranch, also managed by the Fish and Wildlife Service, and Napa Sonoma Marshes, 10,000 acres of former Cargill salt evaporator ponds, now owned and managed by the California Department of Fish and Game as part of the larger Napa Sonoma Marshes Wildlife Area. While both agencies are in the business of protecting habitats for wildlife, state fish and game agencies hold public use and enjoyment of those protected lands as a priority. There are many places to get out and enjoy Napa Sonoma Marshes, most of which are accessed by boat. Some are located further north, but heading west, look for a pull-off at Sonoma Creek and take in this extensive wildlife area, bought and paid for by tax dollars. Before you is a mixture of managed wetlands and diked historic tideland, where at any time of year you're likely to see black-necked stilts walking along the mudflats with their long red legs, the impossibly white, snowy, or great egret, or their close cousin, the great blue heron. In an area populated with 8 million people, It's surprising to see so much open space so close to the bay. A rich agricultural past, with some land still being farmed here today, has resulted in a unique opportunity to restore these lands back to wetland habitats. Napa-Sonoma Marshes was previously used for salt production. Tidal waters were brought into a series of evaporation ponds where they were concentrated into brine over 5 years, eventually producing salt. In 1994, Cargill donated and sold this land to the state for permanent protection. Greg Green, regional biologist with Ducks Unlimited, who's been involved in the restoration of Napa-Sonoma Marshes, discusses the value of the bay and its diverse habitats.
San Francisco Bay is highly recognized for its benefits to migratory birds as well as anadromous fish and native species. It's recognized as a Western Hemispherical Shorebird Network Reserve, which means that at any one time during the winter there could be more than 1 million shorebirds in San Francisco Bay. The North Bay is one of those areas where it's a huge contiguous block of wetland habitat. There's tidal wetlands, there's deep water wetlands, there's managed wetlands, there's seasonal wetlands, transitional grasslands. So it provides a whole gambit of habitat types that benefit that myriad of species that visit and live in the San Francisco Bay Area. In order to have the diversity of wildlife, you need to have the diversity of habitat types that are needed by that wildlife. So areas that consist of all of the various wetland types that the Bay Area can provide for these species just increases the benefits to them.
And also, you may notice a turnoff to Skaggs Island, about midway between Mare Island and the Highway 121 turnoff. A former Navy radar field, Skaggs Island has a significant influence on water flow and impacts all of the wetland restoration efforts between Tole Creek and the Napa River. Joint venture partners are currently involved in negotiations to transfer the property from the Navy to a public agency for conservation purposes. Again, here's Christy Smith talking about the hydrology of San Pablo Bay and why some areas can be more challenging to restore than others.
San Pablo Bay has a unique hydrology. The way waters come out of the San Joaquin, Sacramento River Delta into the Carquinez Strait and out into San Pablo Bay. San Pablo Bay is set north of that channel. So what happens is waters are flowing out of these tributaries like the Napa River and so forth. They tend to kind of form an eddy effect in San Pablo Bay, and they swirl back and around. So all of the tons of sediments that are being washed out of the mountains tend to accumulate in San Pablo Bay. Indeed, if you're standing out on Lower Tubbs Island during low tide, you will see approximately a quarter of a mile or more of mudflats before you, because most of that bay is less than a foot deep. So when you breach something that's adjacent to that bay, the sediments wash immediately in. Now, if you're further up into the watershed, for instance, the upper areas of the Napa River, or if you're going to be at the north end of Skaggs Island, places like that, it would take much longer for those sediments to reach those areas and eventually fill those areas in. Places like Hamilton, they're away from the bay and they're in a different section of the bay. They're not where the sediments are naturally depositing themselves. So some areas are going to require more help. Some areas will sediment in very quickly. So it just depends where you're located and how the water is flowing and dropping those sediments out.
While much of the land along the highway is protected forever and will be restored to wetland habitats, some remains agricultural and some is still privately owned. All of it plays an important role for birds migrating along the Pacific Flyway, many of which you're likely to see on your drive across Highway 37, also known as the North Bay Flyway Highway. Carl Wilcox, regional biologist for the California Department of Fish and Game, knows perhaps as well as anyone what you're likely to see.
Late summer and fall, we start to see the migrants coming back through the shorebirds. Those are the most numerous species that come into the bay, and they're attracted particularly to the bay edge, the mudflats, which are a prime foraging area, but also to the ponded areas and the intake ponds about midway between Sonoma Creek and the Napa River in Vallejo. And those attract large numbers of shorebirds because of the water's very shallow. And shorebirds come off the mudflats and concentrate in those areas during the high tides and roost and forage. And so those are great places to see those species. Also, we start to see the waterfowl coming back, particularly the diving ducks, things like canvasback, bufflehead, ruddy ducks and those kinds of things, and scaup in large numbers. The fall and then on into the winter are probably the highest periods that we see a lot of those species, because they come in and they're spending the whole winter in many cases either as residents or as they move farther south.
And for additional tips for what you might see during the spring and summer along the North Bay Flyway Highway, here's Caroline Warner, Public Outreach Coordinator for the San Francisco Bay Joint Venture.
From March to May, there's hundreds of thousands of shorebirds here in the Bay Area. They're on their journey north along the Pacific Flyway. And here they can find millions of invertebrates in the mudflats and tidal zones. The highest concentrations of these birds are in the South Bay, but a person driving along 37 is likely to see any of the species of birds that come through. These shorebirds, like the small ones, the western sandpipers, or the larger shorebirds, like willets and dowitchers. Then in the summer, when those birds have moved on, there's still the resident flocks of black-necked stilts and avocets probing the mud, and then the waders, of course, like herons and egrets, both the snowy and the great. And with a little luck, it's possible to see even a clapper rail, which is sort of a chicken-like bird. It might be swimming in the slough along the road there, and the clapper rail is actually an endangered species. And always there's the harriers gliding along the levees, and occasionally even a golden eagle or other birds of prey soaring up high.
Hiding behind the hills between the Highway 121 turnoff to Sonoma and Lakeville Road lies Tole Lake, the only inland freshwater lake adjacent to San Pablo Bay, and now protected for its ecological values. Soon to become a county park, Tole Lake provides refuge from storms and nesting and feeding habitat for waterfowl and shorebirds. Continuing west, as you crest the hill, for as far as the eye can see, lies 4,000 acres of protected land called the Sonoma Baylands. John Brosnan, Baylands Project Manager for the Sonoma Land Trust, talks about this region and the values of restoring it.
Sonoma Baylands proper, the Sonoma Baylands Restoration Project, is this 300-acre marsh that we've restored. This is a former farm field that's been restored to tidal action. But Sonoma Baylands, more generally, is the region of southern Sonoma County, which is this historic tidal marsh where Sonoma County meets San Pablo Bay. Historically, there was tidal influence on the north side of Highway 37. The Baylands here provide a lot of opportunity to restore tidal marsh all the way up the Petaluma River. If you follow Lakeville Highway, almost all the way up to Petaluma, that whole corridor between the ridgelines is historic tidal marsh. And along the Petaluma River is, in fact, the largest intact, pristine tidal marsh on the West Coast.
I asked John to talk practically for a moment about the interaction between wetlands and storms.
Storms come from the south in the wintertime, and if they can really whip up the tides and you've got a 9-foot tide, it's the choice between having that tide lap up against this levee, or do you want half a mile or a mile of tidal marsh to break that down, kind of damp out the effect as it comes in?
John told us that 85% of the North Bay's wetlands have disappeared over the past 100 years. He says there are many benefits to restoring wetlands. One of them is recreation.
Wherever we have the opportunity to engineer a restoration, we can also take that opportunity to incorporate elements like the Bay Trail and include the Bay Trail along the water's edge right here. And that also gives us an opportunity for environmental education opportunities and just getting young people out and showing them the project and talking about what used to be here, what's here now, and hopefully instilling in them some environmental ethic that they may take forward.
Soon after Lakeville Road, Highway 37 crosses the Petaluma River. The name is a bit deceptive, though, because it is not a river at all, but really a tidal channel that provides bay access to the city of Petaluma. If you were to travel north along the river, you soon would be surrounded by Petaluma Marsh, the largest pristine tidal marsh on the west coast of North America, encompassing some 4,000 acres. Continuing west along the highway, the wetland projects and habitats are less contiguous and more concealed. In 2003, joint venture partners protected a property involving more than 600 acres of mixed wetlands and associated uplands to the north, called Bahia. To the south, hugging the bay for nearly 2,500 acres, are two more adjacent properties Hamilton, and Bellemarine Keys, where wetlands restoration is currently underway. The purchase of these lands, especially in the Bay Area, comes with a big price tag, as well as the work to restore them. The money to do this work may come from a combination of sources, including private foundations or individual contributions. Often it comes from California taxpayers or the federal government. Maxine Spellman, a project manager for the California Coastal Conservancy, explains how money flows from taxpayers through the Conservancy and ends up helping to protect wetlands.
The Coastal Conservancy is a state agency, and we're often confused with the Coastal Commission, which is a regulatory agency. And the Coastal Conservancy came soon after the Coastal Commission in 1976. We give grants to local government entities and to other state agencies and to nonprofit organizations to do a wide array of projects ranging from restoration, enhancement to public access and acquisition of open space and studies. We're mostly funded through bond acts that are passed by the people of California. Here's how the money flows. The people of California pass the bond acts, and the legislature follows up with that and decides each year how much money each agency should get according to the language of the legislation. And each year they decide how much should be dealt out to the agencies. And the Conservancy gets a good chunk of that every year, as well as another separate chunk of money for the Bay program. We also get funded by the general fund, just money that is part of the state budget that we get, as well as federal money. For example, to help the Sonoma Land Trust here along Highway 37, we got a grant from NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. $500,000 came through the Conservancy to help purchase the property right here along Highway 37. The main point in terms of our giving priorities is, does it have regional significance? We will not fund pet park projects. We have to actually look at the regional significance, the urgency. Is it under threat of development? Is there something really solid that says that this is, we're going to lose this if we don't buy it now? Our board hears each of these projects before we fund them in a public hearing. We have to communicate to our board how each project meets these criteria. I feel really great about this area because we have now like 20,000 acres that are protected from all these acquisitions and all these partners. That wouldn't have happened. You would probably see development instead on the north side of the highway at least. So it's wonderful that we've been able to protect this, and now groups are also working on the restoration of it all. So it's wonderful, and I think we're going to be helping with that as well.
For partners of the joint venture, the past decade has been filled with accomplishments toward the goal of protecting wetlands around San Francisco Bay. In the months and years to come, the focus will turn toward realizing the goal of restoring these areas. Ideally, in the future, the North Bay will include a mix of public and private lands, managed in a way that supports the most wildlife and provides the people of Northern California and all those who visit here the opportunity to get out and enjoy wildlife-oriented recreation. Thanks to the efforts of the many partners in the joint venture, there is good news for wetlands in the North Bay. We hope you've enjoyed this audio tour and encourage you to visit yourwetlands.org often, and stay tuned for more audio and audiovisual experiences in the future. For the San Francisco Bay Joint Venture, I'm Jerry Kaye.